It's that time of the week where we speak to the former Leeds United chairman, Ken Bates. Sonny joins me on the line now. How are you, KB?
Very well, thank you, Sam.
Good, good. It's been a very busy week at Leeds United, as ever. We've had the full accounts published today. There's been a couple of stories in the press, but we'll start with Monday night and the defeat against Brighton. 4-0, a humiliating defeat to Leeds. There was no press conference afterwards from Steve Evans, leading to speculation he may be sacked from his position, but he's been supported so far by Massimo Cellino. Do you think Steve Evans is a dead man walking? Certainly many people are making that assumption.
Well, the short answer is I don't know. I mean, I watched part of the game on Monday night. I must confess, two of the Brighton goals were good, but two of them were absolutely terrible. And you have to ask what they were going about organising the defence, especially away from home. But because it's difficult to get any information out of Ellen Road, you had to have a lot of speculation, which of course means that some of the stories are as inaccurate as accurate. Massimo is the person to decide who he wants to manage the club. He chose Evans when Evans was managing Botham, who were then bottom of the league, and now he's managing Leeds. But I didn't think it was very satisfactory performance. Obviously, they tightened up at half time, but it's a half time score 4-0, full time score 4-0.
Massimo Cellino essentially came out the next day and said he was willing to support Steve Evans as long as he kept his mouth shut, really, is what he was saying. He was blaming the players far too much, in his opinion, certainly in the media, and criticising the squad and almost looking too far ahead towards next year where he doesn't have a contract yet. So from that point of view...
First of all, when all the time I was saying, you never criticise your players in public. If you want to criticise your players, you do it in the dressing room, rather than doing it in public, which is making excuses for your own shortcomings. I never forgave Warnock for destroying Tom Leeds. Remember, we were playing Hull and Tom had gone off in a head injury, a concussion or something, and came back probably too early and made some mistake which enabled Hull to get the winning goal. And Warnock came off and slagged off Tom in public and on the radio and TV. And in fact, so much so, I actually rang Tom on his mobile. He's in the team coach, and Tom, forget what Warnock said. He wasn't fit to lick his boots. And he was a good young player. But Tom was never the same player since. He left on a free chance at Sheffield Wednesday. Great tragedy. I think he'd have played for England one day. No manager should ever criticise his players in public. You do it in the dressing room. And they say, what's said in the dressing room stays in the dressing room. Apart from anything else, football is a matter of self-confidence. Confidence in yourself and ability of others. And how can you do that if you destroy the player, particularly in public? And I agree with Cellino from that point of view.
Do you feel that Steve Evans may feel he has to constantly almost justify his position and almost justify what he's going to do in the future, given the fact that certainly managers these days don't get much time, and they definitely haven't so far under Massimo Cellino at Leeds? Does he feel like he almost has to keep saying things, and that's leading him into trouble?
Well, we just don't know what's going on, do we? Because there is no information coming to the club. We don't know how much authority the coach has got. We don't know the relationship between the manager and the owner, or the chairman, president, whatever what you will. So it's pure speculation. And I'm afraid, if you're a Leeds fan, you're just going to sit and speculate. And of course, they do it on Twitter and Facebook, etc., which again doesn't help the club's public image and self-respect, but nothing to do about it.
That confusion has led potentially to one of the stories in the local press today, which was regarding two of Leeds' young players, Alex Mowat and Lewis Corkin. The story regarding Mowat was about contracts and the fact that talks, according to his agent, hadn't started yet. But the Lewis Cook one was to do with a clause in his contract that apparently could have led to him leaving to £5 million for £5 million in the summer. This has been strongly denied from the club. But as you said there, does it the fact that there is so much silence lead to this kind of stuff?
You need to get the figure out, concentrate on important things, because it is the young players, and get them signed up and get it out of the way. We should never have lost Byron, we have done. But all this dithering that's taking place, that's the indecision. And you think about a young player, when he's 30, when you're 18 or something, okay, sounds great. When you're 35, you finish your yesterday's men. So you have to maximise your career. You have to know what you're doing. And how can you plan to do for the next 15 years or so if your club doesn't give you any indication of their intentions? So the answer is simple. Massimo, sit down, sort out these players. If you don't want them, tell them and get rid of them. If you do want them, get them signed up now. But don't there's any speculation. If it's true they asked Byron to sign a new contract for less money, well, let's not waste their time. You want to keep them, get them signed up and get the end of it. The fans want to know as well. They'll also reflect in season ticket sales.
Yeah, obviously an important time of the season regarding that, when season tickets come out and you start to look ahead to next year. But the fact there is so much off the pitch that's still uncertain, that the team's not doing very well on the pitch, it doesn't bode well. There's a lot of frustration amongst the wider support.
Well, that's in Mr. Cellino's hands. Is that him sorted out? But when I was chairman of both Chelsea and Leeds, once you knew you weren't going to get promotion, once you knew you were safe from relegation, I've said this before, we then blood the kids. Give them experience, find out how good they are. And then it also helps you make up your mind whether to offer them an extended contract or not, and on what terms. But, I mean, we're going round in circles here. It's very simple. You know what's going on, because there's no information coming out of the club, and it's down to Mr. Cellino. Only he can make the decisions, and only he can get on with it. Either that, or give a point to chief executive, unless Paul Bell's got that job already, and tell him to get on with it. It's the indecision. The old saying used to be, do good, do God, but for God's sake, do something. Well, we want something.
The club released a statement on their accounts last week. Today, those accounts became public.
You were reading the point out to me earlier. I haven't seen them yet before. But again, it's so confusing. Now, there's no doubt. I mean, and also Massimo, he tends to make these sweeping statements, such as the one he made on TV recently, without, off the top of his head, without really checking the facts and figures. And he was saying he's trying to sort out the last 12 years. Well, hang on. From 2007, 2011, Leeds made an operating profit before player transactions every year. In 2012, because of the straitjacket win with under the heads of agreement with GFH, it's very difficult. And since then, they've made appalling losses. But some of these losses, they won't seem to be manufactured, but the problem you had is that GFH was supposed to be a large investment bank. Because we know they didn't have any money. They're virtually bankrupt. All that thing about Ken, send Ken the pen and sign the contract. I couldn't do it because there wasn't a contract. because GFH were trying to renegotiate all the time, going, got any money? That's why they didn't complete until the 21st of December. And David Hay told me they were taking money out of clients' accounts to get the purchase price together. And that's one of the reasons they think, we think he's still in jail. Could GFH want to shut him up? She can't reveal the facts and figures. But we do know, apparently, director's remuneration fell. That's because Sean Harvey left and said he wanted to others. But they put a fictitious charge of £3.5 million in for management charges, which they wanted to put in their profit and loss account to bolster their accounts. They won't bother to never be paid, but they could show it as a debt owed by Leeds. Some of these figures I've heard are ridiculous. A management salary is 30 million. Blimey, when I was chairman, 30 million was more than the turnover. Where's it all gone? Where's all this wild money being spent? They were sacking people right, left and centre, as we know. Had internal, had possessed an internal memo where they're trying to say, find something on Sean Harvey so we can get rid of him without paying his rightful compensation. So the accounts, well, I don't know, perhaps they're doing different in Italy. Doesn't make sense to me. GFH was a total disaster. And they're the one that put the club in terrible trouble. And this is the one that Massimo's trying to sort it out. But, don't blame me. We had a nice, tight club running in our budget. We'll probably go back to Beasdale's dying days when the club went bust. And the Yorkshire Consortium tried to save it, but with too little money. And they put 5 million quid in of their own money, some which were borrowed. Then they borrowed 15 million from Jack Petchy, the Isle of Man. Exorbitant interest rates and personal guarantees from the directors, other than Krasner. And because they're in danger, they sold Ellen Road and they sold Four Parts. And they used the money to pay off Petchy, which then released from their personal guarantees. And Leeds had a millstone of rent going up 3% per annum ever since. And yet from 2007 to then, Leeds made an operating profit every year. So how the hell, we have to ask you, how the hell is it in such a mess now? The answer, I think we can say, is A, basically GFH, B, Cellino took it involved and making birth. We've been firefighting ever since. But firefighting, in some respects, in the wrong rooms.
We shall watch the space on everything at Leeds United. Certainly a lot of confusion reigning at the moment. Elsewhere, yesterday we noticed something that it was 12 years since you left Chelsea. Obviously then went on to get involved with Leeds United. But around that time, 12 years ago, yesterday, how do you look back at that time when you left the Stamford Bridge after so long?
Well, the problem is the situation at Chelsea had things in common with the situation at Leeds. You had a foreign, with Cellino now, you had a foreign owner come in and buy the club, which was doing well, with no experience of English football, who didn't speak the language very well, and he was just surrounded by advisors. And they made a number of bad decisions, one of which was to appoint, Peter Kenyon, the Tigg executive, an old adversary of mine. Because Kenyon was a very lucky man. He used to be a commercial director, I think, of Umbro. He used to do kits. He had a big contract with Manchester United. And then he was recruited for Manchester United. And he didn't do a very good job there. He had a good agent who got him to Chelsea. And Kenny and I were old adversaries because we used to fight all the time at the Premier League, the Football League. Right. He wasn't interested in football, he was interested in Manchester United. But of course you need two teams to play a match. You need 10, 15, 20 clubs to play a league. So when he got in power, obviously he wanted to change everything. But I introduced. I didn't like the way it was going, so that's why I walked out and left it. And the difference is between Leeds and Chelsea is that Chelsea had a new owner come in. Money came out of it, £5, 6, 7 billion. But the GFH didn't have two bob to rub together. So the Russian could afford to absorb the mistakes and bad decisions made, if there were any, and carry on and make Chelsea very successful on the pitch, even though Kenyon destroyed the club atmosphere in the process. And that's why I thought it better that I left and let them get on with it, which I have done. And here's an example. I mean, Claudio Ranieri was a very good long-term manager. And they took 12 months to sack him. As we got the phrase, dead man walking was his phrase. Now look where he is. Manager of Leicester City. Small club. Not a lot of money invested in it. And now after last night, of course, he's top of the league with 3 points clear. Only 10 games to go. And how about this for an irony? Last game of the season. Chelsea versus Leicester City. And Claudio Ranieri, the manager, the ex-manager of Chelsea, probably fighting. The day might be the day when the Premiership is decided. As Jimmy Greaves used to say, funny old game.
It certainly is. Obviously, people have been speculating for a long time now about whether Leicester will last the course. They're still there as it is. Knowing Claudio as you do, do you think he, with his extra experience he's got now, be a good man for those Leicester players who don't have the experience in topping the table?
He's a good man, but they're playing very well. I mean, what do you mean they don't have the experience? The experience of playing in the Premier League. They're playing in the Premier League. They're doing well.
Yeah, but in terms of...
It's his mad manager that's important. That's the way he treats them. This fellow, Mourinho, I mean, it's in the paper last week where Frank Lampard said, there's no spirit in the dressing room now, I don't know whether it is or not. That was an ex-Bannett player talking. But it's the way Mourinho handled. I mean, John Terry, he should have been given another year's contract. But he's dragging on. And that affects people on the pitch. Mourinho, the way he treated that doctor, disgraceful. He wouldn't have done it if I was chairman. Wouldn't have dared. And it's just the way he did it. Claudio, very quiet, laugh and joke, self-effacing. Whole thing about, you know, taking the players out for pizza and when they win and they're making them cook their own pizzas. And, you know, he's great at handling. I know Claudio, Claudio very well became a good friend of mine. And it's just his attitude and his way. Big grin, never blames anybody, pats him on the shoulder and had a bad game, picks him up, talks him around, get on with it, lad, you're okay. That's what you have to do. He doesn't blame anybody. You don't see him blaming the referee or the rulers or the sending offs or the dirty fouls or the dives. He just gets on with the game. And people respect him for it. So an awful lot of people, uncommitted people, want Leicester to win the league because of the fact that in these days, mega bucks being thrown away, he's got a well-run little team doing well. And not just think, let's not think Claudio. You've also got Bournemouth, Southampton, Watford, Swansea, Stoke, West Brom. And then when you look at the Championship, you've got Bournemouth coming up, hopefully. Hull knocking on the door. It's great to see the fact that it isn't just about money. Good management, careful planning, and patience brings its rewards. And we're delighted for it. Long may it continue. Meanwhile, the Genetronics, Mr. Gianni Infantini, is now taking over FIFA. And what a mess he's got to clear up.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult for him. And you talked of good management there. The job he's got now is huge.
Well, the whole thing, I've said this for years and years and years. I mean, FIFA stinks from top to bottom. It's okay getting rid of Blatter and Platini and one or two others. But the whole thing is, where do you... I used to know a guy who was a big takeover, but he always said, well, when he sacked all the top management and promote the middle management. And that might be a good idea of FIFA, but the thing is, of FIFA, since corruption and inefficiency is endemic, how far down does it go? It's a bit like politics. Politicians come and go, but the civil servants are always here with their philosophy and inbuilt prejudices and powers. Inactivity. I agree what was said recently, and that is a FIFA to be shut down, start from scratch, empty building, caretaker, new staff. And all the rest is to be lick and paste, cut and paste, stick and paste. Unless the FBI and the Swiss authorities get involved, then we're going to have a chance. But good luck. We don't need FIFA anyway. All they do is have every four years a jolly. And skim off the top and waste on the bottom. What they should do is simply run the four yearly World Cup, put all the money in a pot, then distribute it to the associations afterwards, and let them spend it. Or in some cases, steal it or squander it. And that's the end of it. And then let the rest of the world football get on with it. And if the Asian Confederation are good, have success there. If the African teams are good, well, success there. Same with South America. It depends on the locals. Let them go and face the music.
We should watch the space with FIFA. Elsewhere in the news... Donald Trump continues to make headlines.
If you look at the American presidential election, you've got Hillary Clinton, and over there, all blonde, who talks a lot and says nothing, and Donald Trump, who's a total maverick. But why are they there? It's because the institutions have let their country down. We've had Clinton and Bush, families, who run England, runs America for what, 8, 16, 24 years, and country's a mess. Because they need a Maggie Thatcher there. Haven't got one. And Trump is succeeding because the ordinary American is sick of the pontificators who have been in the White House for so long. I mean, I say Obama has put back black advancement by about 40 years. First black president in power ever. What a chance to do so much. What has he done? Obamacare? Made a mess of whatever interference he'd done in the Middle East. Had done anything about North Korea. Maybe they've got immigration problems that compare almost with Europe. He's useless. Stands up, makes good speech. When you analyse, he said nothing. Which moves us neatly on to the British referendum. Now, I'm a lifelong Tory. I won a classroom election debate when I was 12. But the Tories got so bad under Major, etc. When Blair got in power in 1997, I think it was, I just thought, well, thank God, give them a chance, as we can do. 13 years later, of course, Blair and Brown, having destroyed the country in many ways, Cameron got in. Great. But it was a coalition. Clegg turned to be totally useless. I mean, I thought the worst thing ever happened, some Clegg up during the last 15 election. He said, I don't care who wins the election as long as I'm Deputy Prime Minister in 2020. I thought it was appalling. And I thought, great. Tories are now in power. Great. Go for it. Cameron, you can now do what you said. He'd done nothing. Do you remember, we got so much inefficient civil servants and civil institutions. Whether you call these quangos, these quasi-government bodies are supposed to supervise that. He said, I'm going to make a bonfire of them. Get rid of the lot. Sack the lot. Today, we've got more. When he came to power. He was going to sort out the EC, he was going to sort out this, sort out, sort out, sort out the other. He came back, he's done bugger all. The so-called reforms he brought back aren't worth the paper they're written on. Now all of a sudden he campaigned to stay in the referendum. And he's manipulating the civil service. Civil service is supposed to be impartial. Behind the scenes, the civil service is working for Britain to stay in the EC, and refusing vital information to even cabinet ministers who want to get out. And you've got these scams. How can the average make a decision? But you're not getting any facts. You're just getting wild statements. Oh, you're going to lose your jobs. Oh, why is that? Or you're going to... I saw Cameron the other day saying, you know, under the reforms now we've got a better fishing industry and a better farming industry. Both the fishing and farming are buggered. It said in the paper a couple of days ago that the National Farmers Union estimate we're going to lose 12,000 dairy farmers over the next 12 months. And meanwhile, we're importing bloody dairy products from Europe. So they're talking about, oh, they're going to put up tariffs. Who said they're going to put up tariffs? If you look at Ireland, you've got Europe, Britain, and then Ireland. Ireland, although they've got the Atlantic and America. We, the Brits, buy 50% of Ireland's exports. Are they going to do anything to stop that? Of course they're not. And the other half of, most of the rest of Ireland's exports go through Britain to Europe. Are they going to want us to put a pistol to their head? We buy 60 billion a year more from Europe than they buy from us. Terrible deficit. What are they going to do? And then Cameron says, oh, your holidays are going to be more expensive. And if the exchange rate is wrong. But Spain depends on British tourism. Big country of their economy. As does Italy and Greece. Scaremongering. Why don't they give us facts? will save 500 billion a year in not paying taxes to that over bloated European Commission, all which comes out of the ordinary working population's pockets. If we're out, we'll have control of our own civil, our own courts again. Bloody human rights. Was this guy, so he's got 35 years, he finally fathered 18 kids, he wanted an IVF agreement. Now he's seeking to stay because of his family life. What was that got to do with it? He should have thought of that before he committed his crime. They should all be slung out. We pay 500 million for our citizens when they're ill, overseas in health hospitals and that. Ah, waste of time. Kiss, as they also say in every office in Chelsea and Leeds. Kiss, keep it simple, stupid. That's what we should be doing. The civil servants have a vested interest in making it complicated, justifying their overpaid, overpriced, underworked existence. Well, there you are. Let's talk about something nice now.
Yeah.
Box 44.
Indeed. Yeah.
Sam, and give the details and speak slowly so our listeners, viewers, can go try and get the pen and pencil.
Yep, make sure you have that pen ready. We have the next Box 44 experience is a cracker. The upcoming Yorkshire Derby against Huddersfield Town. It's on the 19th of March. It's a 3 o'clock kickoff. And of course, the VIP matchday experience at Ellen Road in Box 44, if you don't know already, includes an exquisite three course choice menu, complimentary matchday programme, luxurious padded match seats, dedicated hostess, drink service and bar facility, match betting to your table, half time tea, coffee and biscuits, and I think many people agree, just a fantastic day out with some great supporters from both clubs, whether you're Leeds or Huddersfield. But to enter, you have to answer this very simple question. How many goals did Leeds score at the John Smith Stadium in the reverse fixture this season on Saturday, 7th of November? Is it A, 1, B, 2 or C, 3. So that's how many goals did Leeds score at the John Smiths in the reverse fixture on Saturday the 7th of November. 1, 2 or 3. Text A for 1, B for 2 or C for 3. And you have to text your answer. Text DAB and your answer, A, B or C, to 84383. Text only the words DAB A if you think it's one goal, DAB B if you think it's two goals, or DAB C if you think Leeds scored three goals in the reverse fixture at the John Smith Stadium back in November. Text costs £1 plus your standard message rate, and entry to the competition closes on the 16th of March. Winners will be chosen shortly afterwards. Entries outside of the dates will be invalid. For more information, make sure you visit the Radio Yorkshire website, radioyorkshire.co.uk. All the information and terms and conditions are on there as well. So should be an absolute cracker, that one. And KB, this weekend, the Box 44 is going to a very worthwhile charity in Boxes for Kids, something we did last year. And giving disadvantaged children a day out in the box for the home game against Bolton.
That's lovely. But the Huddersfield game is the bragging rights of West Yorkshire.
It's going to be interesting. Going to be interesting.
It's doubly interesting. Okay, Sam, nice talking to you.
Yes.
And to everybody listening in, and or either listening in or reading it later on. And good luck and enjoy it.